This is Pure Evil, the sentencing of Aiden Fucci. Immerse yourself in the gripping courtroom audio as justice unfolds in the chilling case of Tristan Bailey's murder. Witness the raw emotion, the powerful testimonies, and the unfiltered truth of Pure Evil, the sentencing of Aiden Fucci.
I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us. We're now up to segment number four of raw courtroom audio from the sentencing of Aiden Fucci.
Did Judge Cunningham, Circuit Court, now return to order?
You can all be seated. Thank you. All right, State, back on the record. You may call your next witness.
State calls Dr. Gregory Pritchard.
Dr. Pritchard. Sir, if you'll pause right there and raise your right hand, do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Thank you.
Sir, if you'll come up and have a seat in the witness stand.
Thank you, Your Honor.
State, your witness.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Doctor. If you would, introduce yourself to the court and let the court know how you're employed.
My name is Greg Pritchard. Last name is P-R-I-C-H-A-R-D, and I'm a licensed psychologist in the state of Florida.
How long have you been a licensed psychologist in the state of Florida?
This is my 27th year.
And what is your educational background?
I graduated from the University of Florida in 1989 with a bachelor's degree in clinical psychology. I received my master's degree in clinical psychology from Forest Institute of Professional Psychology in 1992. I completed my academic work at Forest Institute for my doctorate degree, and part of that is part of getting your doctorate degree requires that you do an internship, which I did at Florida State Hospital in 1993-1994. Upon completion of the internship, I graduated with my doctorate degree, magna cum laude, with a specialization in assessment and diagnostics in 1994, and subsequently licensed in the state of Florida in 1996.
And after your internship and you were licensed, just kind of walk through generally your areas of employment since that time.
After my internship that I completed in 1994, I was retained by the hospital, Florida State Hospital. I worked there for 7 years on several different units there. The first unit was a dual diagnosis unit. It was a unit for individuals who were intellectually disabled and mentally ill. I then worked at a civil admission unit where individuals are committed for long-term care to Florida State Hospital on the civil side, in other words, absence of any criminal allegations against them. And then I worked at a forensic admission unit at the hospital where the state's adults who have criminal charges and they're either incompetent to proceed or they're not guilty by reason of insanity and they require hospitalization. My duty was essentially to make an effort to rehabilitate them and return them to the community. And that was a 7-year span, 1994 to 2001. During that span, I had a one-day-a-week private practice where I did forensic evaluations in the community, so competency assessments, sanity assessments, violence risk assessments, sexual predator evaluations under the State Sexual Predator Act, so all forensic-related evaluations. And then in 2001, I resigned from the hospital and have been in full-time forensic private practice since then.
And you mentioned a number of evaluations that you conduct. When you do that, since you've been in private practice moving forward, are you often hired by both the state and defendants?
I am, yes.
Okay. And how have you done thousands of evaluations, Dr. Pritchard?
Thousands of evaluations, yes. I would say by this point more than 10,000 forensic evaluations.
Okay. Do a number of your evaluations include criminal defendants charged with various amounts of violent crimes?
Yes, that is a very regular part of my practice.
And what about evaluating juveniles? Do you do that as well?
I've done that my entire career. In fact, before I got my doctorate degree, I worked on a juvenile psychiatric facility. That's where I started with juveniles. Since I've been licensed, I have had a contract with Apalachicola Forest Youth Camp, which is it's the state's facility where juveniles who are considered incompetent to proceed in the criminal realm, they are committed to Apalachicola Forest Youth Camp. It's 17 miles from my house. I've been contracted with them for about 15 years. I also regularly do juvenile competency evaluations, primarily in the Second Circuit, Leon County, and the First Circuit, Escambia County, Pensacola, those two circuits, but also others throughout the state. I also evaluate juveniles for sex offender recidivism risk, so sex offender juvenile evaluations. I also do evaluations of juvenile sentencing. So under the juvenile sentencing laws that came out between 2010 2012, things that need to be attended to when sentencing juveniles. So I've done dozens of those under those juvenile sentencing laws.
And what you're referring to there is that what's commonly known in our field as the Miller-Graham decisions, and then the rules essentially in Florida that came about in the statutes and all the factors that courts are to consider when sentencing juveniles. Is that
That's
what you're
correct.
Referring to?
Yes.
And you testified in Miller-Graham sentencings or resentencings of juveniles since those laws have changed?
Many, yes.
In reference to State of Florida versus Aiden Fucci, what were you asked to do in this case?
I was asked to do an evaluation of Mr. Fucci for sentencing purposes. So under the juvenile sentencing laws, there's one juvenile sentencing law, 921.1401 of Florida statutes, that specifically addresses things that should be considered when sentencing juvenile for capital murder cases. So I was asked to evaluate Mr. Fucci and compile a report based on the variables outlined in that statute.
Now, were you ultimately permitted to have a face-to-face evaluation with Mr. Fucci?
I was not permitted to see Mr. Fucci.
Okay. What categories of records, and we'll go through those, did you review in this case prior to forming your opinions?
Well, I reviewed the St. John's County Sheriff's Office investigative reports regarding the investigation into the disappearance and subsequent murder of Tristan Bailey. I reviewed the medical examiner's autopsy report as well as the autopsy photos. I reviewed transcripts from Mr. Fucci's girlfriend at the time, Zoffie Bowman. There were four separate transcripts that I reviewed from her. I watched audio and video of three separate interviews of Mr. Fucci's best friend, Dolphus Absher. He goes by Trey, so I'll refer to him as Trey if that's okay. I also reviewed a number of school records spanning Mr. Fucci's educational career. I reviewed pictures of the photos that were located in Mr. Fucci's room that have already been referenced. I reviewed a Snapchat folder that contained the Snapchat videos and texts that were sent by Mr. Fucci when he was in the back of the police car. I reviewed audio interviews of approximately 10 teachers that had familiarity with Mr. Fucci at Patriot Oaks Academy, where he was attending school, as well as his previous school. I listened to audio of Tristan Bailey's parents, Forrest and Stacy Bailey, prior to Tristan Bailey being located. I reviewed an audio of a cousin I have her initials here. It's, I believe, Hannah Cunningham, as well as a deposition of Hannah Cunningham. I had deposition transcripts of probation officer Dwayne Barton, who has had some association with Mr. Fucci at the Duval County Jail, Sergeant William Cox, who is from the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, who works at the jail, information, it was a deposition transcription from an ESE teacher that Mr. Fucci had, Alyssa Gates. I had deposition transcripts of brother Dylan Hicks, not listed in my report, which I reviewed after I submitted my report, is a deposition transcript of brother Preston Fucci, also a deposition transcript of friend Michaela Harris. I had a couple of Jacksonville Sheriff's Office incident reports that were written about Mr. Fucci since he's been at the Duval County Jail, one in January of 2022, one in October of 2022. I reviewed videos of Mr. Fucci in a court appearance, one on September 1st of 2021, one on September 8th of 2021. And then a letter and an audio interview of an adult inmate at the Duval County Jail with the initials AS.
Okay. Based on that volume of records you just outlined and everything that you reviewed in this case, photographs, was that information sufficient for you to form opinions in your area of clinical psychology as it relates to the factors that the court's to consider in this juvenile sentencing?
Yes, I believe so. There is a lot of records, and one central aspect of any forensic evaluation is the records that we have about the individual that we're evaluating. Now, there's a limitation. I'm obligated to express this. There's a limitation that I could not see Aiden Fucci. So that limits my evaluation process a bit, but because of the volume and density of the records I was able to review, a lot of teachers, family members, friends, I felt like I had sufficient information to draw a lot of conclusions.
Okay. And is this the only case you've ever been asked to assess on where a defendant, you haven't had that face-to-face, or a defendant didn't cooperate with you?
No, not at all. It's not uncommon for a individual in the criminal justice system to refuse an evaluation, to refuse to have face-to-face contact with a psychologist. So it happens pretty regularly.
Okay, and you're confident in this case that based on the records, they're sufficient for your opinions that you'll give here today?
Yes.
Okay. Now I want to move to the sentencing factors that the court is to consider. In your report, Dr. Pritchard, you...
Your Honor, at this time, defense renews the objection to the motion that was filed regarding Dr. Pritchard's testimony.
Let me hear the full question, please. What is your question first?
I don't think it was to my... Was it to my question, or... I think I was about to move into opinion, so she's just making an objection.
All right, let me...
I was about to begin asking him his opinions as relates to the factors we're here to discuss.
Based upon your prior arguments, you're renewing your objection.
Yes, sir.
And that objection is overruled. You may proceed, counsel.
Okay, thank you. Doctor, you did a thorough job, and you did address the nature and circumstances of the offense, in which is factor A for the court, in your report. The court has heard a lot about that this morning already, as I believe you've been here as well through other witnesses. So I don't need you to recite those again, but just as they're relevant to the other factors,
yes,
if you'll just bring them up,
yes, ma'am,
as we walk through these. I kind of want to start with factor C in this case. That factor had you analyze and look at the defendant's age, maturity, intellectual capacity, general mental and emotional health at the time of the offense. And so I kind of want to talk and that's a big section in your report, but I want to go through that and see what you were able to glean from the records of importance about Mr. Fucci in those areas at the time. And so we can start with teachers or however you want to start with that.
I think just if we will take each you know, descriptor here individually, like age, for example.
Okay.
Factually, Mr. Fucci was 14 and a half years old when this incident occurred. Okay. The next descriptor under the C factor is maturity, and maturity is sometimes a difficult thing to assess. In many cases, you will have commentary in the records from, for example, teachers that describe the individual as mature or immature. So what I noted with regard to maturity for Aidan Fucci at the time was that there was, in all the records that I reviewed, there was no commentary that Mr. Fucci was immature. Okay, so I thought that was fairly remarkable that nobody's characterizing him as immature for his age. I did see two characterizations of Mr. Fucci being mature. So one of those characterizations came from his juvenile probation officer who has contact with him at the jail. Officer Barton described him as mature for his age. I also noted that his best friend, Trey, when describing Aidan Fucci, described him as more mature than the peers, which is part of the reason that Trey described that he got along well with Mr. Fucci. So those were the only specific references to his maturity status from all of the records that I reviewed.
And similarly related to maturity, I think you have some comments noted about whether he was like a leader, characterized as a leader or a follower amongst his peers. What
right,
did you learn about that?
Sometimes you kind of glean a maturity level based on whether they're considered leaders in their classrooms or with their peers, or conversely followers. So obviously when somebody is described as a leader, they tend to be more mature than the peers that they're hanging around with, which is why they are characterized as leaders. So I saw two references, one from girlfriend Zoffie Bowman and one from friend Michaela Harris, that they believed and they perceived that Mr. Fucci was the leader when it came to him and his best friend, Trey Absher.
The next sort of descriptor in that factor is intellectual capacity or intelligence. What were you able to determine about Mr. Fucci's intelligence based on the records you had?
So I think the best place to start in terms of intelligence is this. His intelligence was never formally tested. So there's no school records that indicate he was given a formal Wechsler intelligence scale for children would be the standard one. So there's no indication that he was given one of those in the school environment. Again, though, I didn't see characterizations of Mr. Fucci being unintelligent or having cognitive problems. Okay, and we say cognitive problems, it's synonymous with intellectual problems, being not very smart or having cognitive processing or comprehension problems. There was no characterizations of that. The only specific reference I saw to Mr. Fucci's intelligence came from Sergeant Cox at the Duval County Jail. He described Mr. Fucci as intelligent but without many street smarts.
Okay. And you did also review grades and how he was categorized at school. If you'll describe that and perhaps the difference between academics and what you just discussed as intelligence.
Okay, so in school, he was in special education classes. So he was in ESE, which stands for Exceptional Student Education Classes. his designation. Under that ESE umbrella, there's a lot of different designations. Some refer to designations because of cognitive or intellectual limitations. Some of them refer to limitations because of academic difficulties, which is separate from cognitive intellectual. It's academic. Some of the designations under the ESE umbrella have to do with behavioral issues, like emotional handicap. So Mr. Fucci was in special education classes for specific learning disability, acronym SLD. Now, what SLD generally means in the school environment is that the student's academic performance is lower than what is expected given his intellectual capacity. So in other words, he's underperforming academically. Okay, so he was in SLD classes and he was recognized as having some academic difficulties. Pretty consistently, he was described in the school environment as struggling academically. Okay, in specific areas, so specific learning disabilities. So specific for Mr. Fucci was language arts, like reading, and math. Those were appeared to be his two primary areas of academic difficulty. So, he had tutors. He had services in that SLD curricula where he had ESE teachers who would spend individualized time with him. He still struggled in those areas. Now, there was another indication of academic deficiency relative to peers. So there's a Florida standard assessment. It's a standardized academic measure that is given to every student yearly to see where they match up with their peers, their same age peers, in terms of performance in a number of different subjects. So Mr. Fucci took these Florida standard assessment each year like all the other students. The scale is basically 1 to 5. 5 is the best, that means mastery, whereas 1 is the worst, which means the term they use is inadequate. Mr. Fucci scored in the 1, the inadequate range, pretty consistently in language arts and in math, and at least one time in science too. So clearly those were some specific problems for him in the academic environment.
And what about his grades? You reference, I believe, kind of starting, I think it went back to fourth grade, and then
right.
How they go over time.
Right. The grades were never great. He had some better years and some worse years. It looked like his worst year was likely the sixth grade. Sixth grade, it was a lot of D's and F's. Not all D's and F's, but a lot of D's and F's. However, I noted that in seventh and eighth grade, his grades seemed to get a little better. It seemed like maybe at that time he was getting a little more individualized attention in the SLD, exceptional student education context. So his grades in seventh and eighth grades were, a couple of A's, a couple of B's, several C's, one D, one F. I think that was seventh grade, and then eighth grade it was similar. So it was kind of all from some A's, at least one F. But I would say in average, it was probably C average if you averaged all of the grades. So his grades weren't terrible. They weren't good. They were kind of middle of the road, except worse when he was in the sixth grade and seemed to get better. Now, I noted that there was it's called an IEP, standing for Individualized Education Plan. These students that are in the ESE curricula, they are given a individualized education plan so they can map out kind of goals for the student. I noted the last one for Mr. Fucci was put together in April of 2021, which would have been 1 month before before the murder. So at that point in time, he was still on track to receive a standard high school diploma. So sometimes when it's obvious that a child is not going to academically be able to achieve to the point to get a standard high school diploma, they will get what's called a special education diploma. In Mr. Fucci's case, his last IEP indicated that he was still on track to receive a standard high school diploma. One other thing that was referenced in that IEP was there's a question on the IEPs: does the child's behavior interfere with his academic achievement or the achievement of other students? So on that last IEP, that question was answered yes. So there was another dimension here with Mr. Fucci, and that dimension is he had some behavioral issues in school as well.
And I want to talk about the behavior in just a minute, but before we get to that, along this line of his ESC and SLD designations, when you reviewed all of the information from the teachers, there was a dean in that mix, I believe, a dean of discipline and the teachers, did their descriptions of him and his performance, were they consistent with that descriptor of an academic problem versus the actual cognitive intellectual? And explain that a little bit to the court.
Question beyond the scope.
Scope of his expertise?
Yes, Your Honor, she's asking questions about education, not as a psychologist of his role.
Repeat your question, please.
No. I'm asking him if the teachers provided any information to support his opinion that Mr. Fucci had more of an academic problem than a cognitive problem.
The objection is overruled.
Yes, it was fairly consistent from the teacher's perspective. And again, there was no reference to him having cognitive deficits. Like Mr. Fucci isn't bright or he's struggling cognitively. The consistent characterization by teachers was that he has the ability and the capacity to achieve academically, but his motivation is lacking. So it was that other component was some behavioral issues, excuse me, some lack of motivation, some lack of effort that was also getting in the way of his academic performance.
Okay. And before I interrupted there, you were going to move on to the behavior and disciplinary issues that could be playing a part in these grades and things that you saw. Is that right?
Right. It kind of goes hand in hand. When we have students who behaviorally, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're getting in a lot of trouble, maybe suspensions, then that can affect their academic progress because they're not always listening to the learning that is provided by the teacher or, you know, these grades 1 through all the way through 12th, each grade builds on the next in terms of skills. So if the student isn't picking it up because their behavior is poor, they're not motivated, then as they progress through school, their academics are usually going to get worse. Okay, so what I noted about Mr. Fucci in terms of his behavior in the third grade, his behavior was characterized as pretty good. So he got satisfactory ratings from his teachers in terms of his conduct in essentially every area. Excuse me. By fourth grade, there seemed to be some indication that his behavior was getting a little worse. So there were some characterizations by teachers that he wasn't always motivated to do his best. He wasn't always controlling his conduct. So you saw that a little more in fourth grade, and it seemed to get worse as time went on, which is not unusual. A lot of times with adolescence, with pubescence, when a child gets to be 12, there's hormones and there's different social demands, and sometimes that's when we really see the bad behavior emerge from a child who maybe had demonstrated fairly good behavior before then. So we see that. So I noted that he had between February of 2018, so February of 2018, Mr. Fucci would have been 11 years old. And April of 2021, which again is a month before the murder, and he would have been 14 years old. So in that span of 3 years, he had 22 disciplinary referrals. Okay, so that's a fairly high number in a school environment. Okay, 22 disciplinary referrals. So I noted the nature of the disciplinary referrals. Were they violent? Were they not violent? I noted that two were violent, which is not, it's not a real high number of violent incidents, but in May of 2019.
Objection, Your Honor, and we're renewing the previous motion about the prior bad act.
All right, over objection, you may testify to this, Doctor.
In May of 2019, and again in October of 2019, he had two disciplinary referrals for punching another student in the face. I saw a disciplinary referral in March of 2019 where he was referred because he was cheating. He had the math answers on his phone. I saw mostly disciplinary referrals for characterizations of him being disrespectful to teachers, disruptive in the class environment, or just kind of oppositional with teacher demands, and also on the bus. So those disciplinary issues over that span of time resulted in at least three out-of-school suspensions and at least four in-school suspensions. So that's, again, between 11 and 14, which he was in 8th when he was in 14. So that would have been going back to about the 6th grade, where behavioral things seem to very likely affect his progress and his academics, which the majority of his teachers recognized and talked about.
How does that compare to, you know, comparing the individual of Aiden Fucci to a group of his peers, juveniles, and what you know about the occurrence of suspensions and things like that?
Right. It's important to know, because in a vacuum, we don't know if that's relevant or not. So, but it's not in a vacuum. So what we know is that individuals in school, juveniles, that's kindergarten through 12th grade, suspensions rates nationally in, this was 2019, was 5%. So 5% of students got suspended at least one time. That was actually down from a couple of years before that, where it was 7%. But it hovers around that area in the last 10 years or so, where 5, 6, 7% of students get at least one suspension during a year. So the point is, it's unusual. So we can knowledgeably say that Mr. Fucci getting suspended from school is unusual for his group of peers. Relative to his group of peers, it's an unusual thing, and it you know, provides us some information to make some judgments about him.
And then moving on to that mental and emotional health, I think you've already commented on the teachers, but teachers, and then I believe his two closest friends, Sophie and Trey, provided a lot of that insight for you. Is that right?
Yes, that's mental and emotional health. If I may, I'll go back over the teachers a little bit, just because I didn't cover everything. So there was some consistency in what teachers related about their experience with Mr. Fucci, and there were some things that were a little bit inconsistent between teachers. The consistent points were teachers said consistently, without exception, he has the ability to understand and comprehend. Okay, he seems to understand right from wrong. He seemed to understand there were consequences for inappropriate conduct or not doing your work or whatever. They all were consistent in relating that they had never seen Mr. Fucci appearing that he was responding to voices in his head or making the verbalization that he heard voices in his head. So those are the consistent things amongst teachers, and I think really relevant. It speaks to a lot of things, including, you know, ability to appreciate risks and consequences in general, understanding right from wrong. He knew these things in a general way, according to teachers. Now, some of the inconsistent things between teachers, you know, there was bad and good. One of his ESE teachers that spent a lot of time with him in the seventh grade was Alyssa Gates. And she said Aiden was a pleasure to work with. He worked hard. There was no behavioral issues whatsoever. He did what she asked him to do, seemed to want to do well and achieve. So that's kind of one end of the spectrum from one teacher, whereas other teachers, for example, one of the teachers, you know, described him straight out, said he was a punk. His PE teacher, it was teacher Jay Shepherd, said that he was difficult to deal with. Said that he was defiant and he would rarely dress out for PE. Said that he was aggressive, and gave the example that Mr. Fucci would like plow through kids that were in his way because he wanted to walk where those children were standing. So he just kind of plow through them. Characterized that Mr. Fucci seemed to always want to get in a fight or an altercation, was looking for it. So a little bit of a mixed bag according to what teacher was characterizing their experience with Mr. Fucci in school, and it kind of ran the gamut from quiet and respectful to kind of aggressive and very defiant.
And I believe Ms. Gates, she was from his previous school, if you recall that, seventh grade, and if you recall the audios that you listened to, which was the large amount of teachers, were those his most recent teachers that law enforcement was interviewing shortly after the murder?
Yes, those are his most recent teachers at Patriot Oaks. You're right, Alyssa Gates was a later deposition, and she had experience with Mr. Fucci at his previous school in the ESE department.
But the eighth grade teachers and the dean and all those that you referenced that were at least more consistent, those were all his current, as of the date of the homicide.
That was.
And teachers.
Right, and a lot of those consistencies that I mentioned, I'll even mention that one of the teachers, Mr. Wetjen, W-E-T-J-E-N, he had known Mr. Fucci for quite a long time and described himself as a mentor to Mr. Fucci. So point being, Mr. Fucci had at least one adult mentor in the school environment that was trying to help him. He said Mr. Fucci would seek him out if he was in trouble and they would talk about things. So Mr. Fucci seemed to have some, you know, positive people that he could contact in the school environment to help him out if he needed it.
Is that all for the teachers and
I
along
think
those
so.
Lines?
Yes,
and then we
yes,
move
ma'am.
On to his peers, Sophie and Trey. And I know there's a lot of information from Sophie that law enforcement gathered about him generally, his emotional and mental health close in time to this crime. So if you could talk about the things that are of significance to you and your ultimate opinions in this case.
Right. I think a good place to start is with some of the things that were described by girlfriend Zoffie Bowman. Now, just as a context, Zoffie Bowman and Aiden Fucci had been dating since January or February of 2021, so multiple months, spent a lot of time together. Ms. Bowman described that she and Mr. Fucci and some other peers, they were kind of into what she described as gore, what she described as horror, H-O-R-R-O-R. So they liked to watch horror movies. They like to watch gory horror movies. So she commented about that. She also characterized that, they all had what she described as dark humor. Okay, so that was part of the context where she disclosed some of this information. She said that she and Mr. Fucci talked a lot about things they saw on these horror shows and gory movies, that a lot of times they would discuss death and killing in the context of these types of movies, okay? But she went beyond that a bit, and she also described that her words were that Mr. Fucci talked about death and killing a lot, okay? Now, he talked about death and killing a lot. She gave a couple of examples when Mr. Fucci got really mad at her because she sent a picture of her in a photo with another guy that happened to be her sister's boyfriend or friend that was a boy. And she said that Mr. Fucci got extremely upset about this, and his reaction was to say he was going to kill that boy. She also gave an example of Zoffy Bowman asking Mr. Fucci, would you like to hang out with me and a couple of my guy friends? And she said that Mr. Fucci's response to that was to talk about how he was going to kill those two guy friends. So this is important because there was a lot of this killing and death talk from Mr. Fucci that's unusual. And it was occurring outside of just the context of talking about gory movies, right? Sometimes that was the context. Other times it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Like the example of him saying he was going to kill these boys that she was around. In that same theme, she talked about, her words were that Mr. Fucci talked about wanting to kill her, and that he would sometimes do things to her, like take his knife out and pretend to stab her, or walk up behind her and pretend to slit her throat. Now, she indicated she wasn't scared of this. She wasn't scared of Mr. Fucci because she trusted him with regard to those specific acts. But it was interesting that he would make the comment that he wanted to kill his girlfriend, Zoffy Bowman. She took it as kind of a joke and is not serious. She also made a similar comment that I thought was significant, that Zoffy Bowman said, that's basically why Mr. Fucci no longer stayed at my house, because he talked about how easy it would be to kill me when I slept. So you see, this is going beyond just kind of this talk about gory movies. It's, I'm not sleeping at your house because you would be really easy to kill while you're sleeping. A really, really peculiar, unusual, rare kind of comment repeatedly made to one of Mr. Fucci's closest friends. Now, It even goes beyond this, okay? So this is the thing that is, I think, most relevant, although the things I was talking about are relevant to this particular case, but the most relevant verbalizations by Mr. Fucci in the Tristan Bailey murder was Zoffy Bowman recalled Aiden Fucci telling her that basically asking, what would you do if I really killed somebody? And then following that up with, expect me to kill somebody within this month. So Zoffy Bowman was asked if she could pin the date down. She couldn't exactly pin it down, but she said she believed that remark was made by Mr. Fucci in the month of May of 2021, the same month where the murder occurred. Okay, and When talking about how he would kill, so really it's extensive. It's not just a remark here and there. It seemed to be a real fascination of his. When he talked about killing somebody, he even told Zofie Bowman how he would do it. And what he told her was, I would walk around at night, and I would find somebody else walking at night. I would drag them in the woods, and I would stab them. And then I would pretend like I didn't do it so that I could keep killing people. Now, kind of, again, in a vacuum, that's a weird statement. That's a weird remark. But this isn't in a vacuum. When we examine that statement occurring close to when Tristan Bailey was murdered and how similar, how remarkably similar it is, it speaks to me. It speaks to emotional health, first off. It's unusual. I can't stress that enough, how unusual it is for a peer to be talking about this kind of thing so frequently in such detail with such gore. It's pretty bizarre. And to actually carry it out, because that's the other thing. We compare Mr. Fucci to his population, other juveniles. Juveniles sometimes make violent remarks. Juveniles sometimes talk about violent fantasies. It isn't something that usually kind of predominates what they verbalize or is a fascination like it seemed to be with Mr. Fucci. But to get as specific as Mr. Fucci got in terms of talking with Zofie Bowman about the things he was thinking, I think it really suggests to me that he's giving a glimpse of what he's thinking about, what he's fantasizing about. She even said that she believed he was just talking about a fantasy. But even so, fantasy is a rehearsal. Often it's a rehearsal of what we want to do or what we're interested in. So there seemed to be a lot of that going on with Mr. Fucci preceding the murder of Tristan Bailey. And it's different because he actually carried it out. Okay, he carried out that fantasy. He just didn't verbalize it. He verbalized what he'd like to do and that he would do it soon, and he actually did it, which suggests some rehearsing of that very kind of instance with Tristan Bailey.
Is that sort of verbalization and all the different pieces of evidence that you have that point to that thought process, is that even unusual amongst juveniles that commit violent acts?
It is. It's very unusual. And again, it's not that uncommon for juveniles to talk about something violent occasionally or get in a fight occasionally, but to talk about death and dying in almost a preoccupied way. It's extremely, extremely unusual, and that violent, not punching somebody in the face, stabbing somebody. He also made the comments to his best friend, Trey Absher, that I'll talk about next in that same vein.
And before we move on to Trey, when you were originally talking about how some of the context of these comments were in sort of a shared interest of watching horror movies with Zofie, his girlfriend, did she explain, though, a difference between what she was interested in and what Mr. Fucci was interested in that respect?
Yes, thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah, so that was an interesting thing, too. So Zofie Bowman made it clear, I like gore and horror, but it was fictional. It wasn't real. It was a movie. It was pretend, right? But she said that she commented about Mr. Fucci actually pulling up videos off the internet that were real-life gore videos. So they're out there. So real-life gore videos of, she said, somebody getting his head chopped off or somebody getting shot. And that was a distinction she made. She said, yeah, I like gore, but it's fictional and fake. Whereas he seemed to look for the real life, not TV stuff, and he enjoyed looking at that.
I'm Sophie had also witnessed Mr. Fucci outside of herself commit a violent act or be in a fight, I believe, as well, close
yeah,
in time.
She talked about seeing him violent when he beat up another kid at a food truck one Friday night, basically stole his vape pen. Mr. Fucci stole the kid's vape pen, and the child wanted it back, and Mr. Fucci beat up the child.
And when he described the type of people he wanted to kill, do you recall what Sophie indicated, the type of people, whether they were people he liked or didn't like?
Well, he said he wanted to kill people he liked, and she specifically referenced in that case that he kind of pulled that from a horror movie. He related to that line in the horror movie of killing somebody you liked. She also indicated that he typically talked about killing other guys, less so about girls, more about guys.
Okay. And then what information, if any, did his closest best friend, Trey Absher, have, consistent or inconsistent with Sophie?
I mean, it's more of the same thing. So I think one of the differences in Trey Absher in terms of what Mr. Fucci verbalized to him is the statement, it would be satisfying to slit somebody's throat, and the statement, it would be satisfying to watch the blood drain out. Now, really unusual for anybody to make those remarks as that satisfying, right?
Right.
What was interesting is Trey Absher had a response that I thought represented what is within the realm of normal, a normal response to these remarks by Mr. Fucci. So I think it would be satisfying to slit somebody's throat. I think it would be satisfying to watch the blood drain out. Trey Absher's remark was, it was weird and not normal. And he even said that, I can't imagine stabbing somebody like that, especially repeatedly. Okay, so it's interesting to think about. That's a normal response. Most of us can't imagine doing this harm to another person, especially in such violent and close-up way. And that was Trey's experience of those remarks, but Mr. Fucci didn't seem to have any compunction to making those remarks, and understand, you know, the effect it had on even his friend.
Dr. Pritchard, kind of moving into the information you gathered about Mr. Fucci's general background, his family, home, and community, what of significance did you note was present and not present about Mr. Fucci's background that ultimately adds to some of the opinions you give in this case?
Right. So this was a little bit of a mixed bag, too, depending on who you asked. So I'll go with Zoffie Bowman and Trey Absher first, peers. So Zoffie Bowman in particular talked about Mr. Fucci telling her that things were really difficult at home, that he did not feel very very loved or appreciated by his parents. He felt like he was the least important and least liked out of all the family. Zoffie Bowman also said that Mr. Fucci described that his biological father, Jason Fucci, was sometimes physically abusive. She chronicled four specific incidents where Mr. Fucci told her that dad choked him one time, slapped him one time, and punched him two times. So four separate incidents of what she described as Mr. Fucci saying Jason Fucci was physically abusive towards him. She also described that mother was not a very good mother figure. She went so far as to say that Mr. Fucci described what she believed was emotional abuse in the home from mother. She related that she had urged Mr. Fucci to report it. She was concerned enough to say, you need to report this. This is emotional abuse. As time went on, she dropped that idea because Mr. Fucci didn't seem very responsive to her concern about emotional abuse in the home. So those were the suggestions from peers that some things were going on at home that were, you know, less than healthy. Now, the siblings of Mr. Fucci, and that would be Dylan Hicks and that would be Preston Fucci, did not characterize that there was any abuse in the home. Okay. In fact, Dylan Hicks described Jason Fucci as a fantastic father, as a very good father figure who was basically always there for him. Characterized a different kind of discipline than Zoffy Bowman indicated Mr. Fucci told her, and the discipline was essentially he got spanked on the butt by Jason Fucci if he did something wrong. Also, that discipline in the home involved go to your room, not being able to have contact with your peers, or taking away your cell phone. So obviously a very different characterization from Sophie Bowman suggesting that Mr. Fucci said that Jason was, in particular, was physically abusive and mom was emotionally abusive. Grandmother, Deborah Spiewak, that's maternal grandmother of Mr. Fucci. She's been in the home a lot. She used to live there during the week, had another home, and that's where she'd go during the weekend, but spent a great deal of time with Aiden Fucci and the family. She didn't characterize that there were any problems in the home at all. She essentially said that everybody got along well, that Jason Fucci was a fantastic father, that Michael Akel, stepdad, was a fantastic father, that Crystal Smith, Deborah Spiewak's own daughter, was a wonderful mother. She said that since the split of Mr. Fucci's biological parents, so blended family, two different households, that neither parent had ever missed one of their prescribed weekends that they had custody of Aiden and his siblings. So she described that it was very positive, that everybody worked hard, that it was very conscientious parenting, that the children had all they needed and wanted. She described them as spoiled kids, in fact. She described herself as very close to Aiden Fucci. So, again, a little bit of a mixed bag. Most of the people in the home, other than Aiden Fucci, were describing what I would say is fairly normal existence in that home, whereas what came from Zoffy Bowman, which is what came from Aiden Fucci, was there were some incidents of perhaps physical abuse in the home, and what Zoffy Bowman perceived in the description from Aiden Fucci to be emotional abuse from mother.
And again, comparing this individual to similar peers and in the criminal justice system, juveniles that you've looked at, how did his background sort of compare to other backgrounds that you witness and see that contribute to behaviors and things?
I mean, I would say, relatively speaking, he had a very good background. Of course, in the criminal realm, we see a lot of poverty often. We see a lot of abuse. We see a lot of drug addiction. There was also commentary that Mr. Fucci's parents didn't use alcohol or drugs. So I would say he had a very good upbringing, relatively speaking. We didn't see any of that clear dysfunction that you often see in criminal cases. We didn't see poverty. We saw a picture of the house earlier, at least I would say middle-class family, middle-class household. A lot of people interested, grandmother, biological father, stepmom, biological mom, stepdad, siblings. So a lot of people interested in Mr. Fucci and his sibling and his family's lives, which is also sometimes not seen in the criminal context. So I would say, relatively speaking, it was pretty unremarkable, pretty normal, you know, existence for him.
Okay. And then moving on to one of the other larger categories of factors that you considered, talk about what you learned through the records and how that relates to the effect of any immaturity, impetuosity, failure to appreciate risks and consequences. And obviously the importance of this is how all that relates to his participation in the offense.
Right, participation in the offense. So I've talked about immaturity. You know, the important thing, I think, is he's 14 and a half. So he's immature relative to an older population. Okay, so all 14-year-olds are, relative to young adults or older adolescents. But relative to his peers, no description of him being immature. Immaturity related to the crime, it's so unusual. The behavior is so unusual in this case, you know, for a 14-and-a-half-year-old, that it's hard to know if immaturity played any role whatsoever. I can't really offer an opinion on that beyond what I've already said.
What about impetuosity?
Impetuosity, I would pull in what I would describe as fantasies, the pre-existing experience of violent fantasies in Mr. Fucci's head that he verbalized to peers that were very descriptive, that were very similar to what happened to Tristan Bailey. I would say that suggests to me some rehearsal, perhaps some premeditation. And when I say perhaps some premeditation, when he says, expect me to kill somebody this month, and he's already kind of outlined how he would do it, it seems like he had some rehearsal of that in his head before it occurred. And so that was important. Okay, it suggests the opposite of impetuosity. So if you're planning it and thinking about it fairly extensively before it occurs, it's not impetuous, that's more planned. Okay. He even made that comment to Zoffy Bowman. If he does it, it's going to be planned. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it, I would say, and a really important one, is the actual crime. Okay. So these terms, impetuosity, okay, what does that really mean? Well, impetuosity, impulsivity, lack of forethought, where you just kind of do something and you don't think about it and you don't think about the consequences, is essentially what it means in this context. So the crime, and I would like to illustrate my point with a hypothetical, if I may.
Yes.
Okay,
I'm
so
objecting, Your Honor, there's no question being posed.
I can pose a question.
All right.
Again, the court has heard the facts, and I know you'll weave them into your answer about the nature of this crime.
Right.
If you were to compare the nature of the crime itself that Aiden Fucci committed to the larger group of his peers and juveniles that commit violence, why is it that you call this particular act not impetuous, and what is an example of one that would be?
Okay, so in terms of what is an example of one that would be, that I've seen in my own experience.
Sorry, an objection again, Your Honor. So now he's describing the nature of a crime. He's here qualified as an expert in psychology, not in crime scene, or even in detailing the nature of a crime. So I'm objecting to this line of questioning.
I can't
hear her. All right, she's going to repeat her objection.
I know, I apologize. Defense is objecting to the line of questioning. Dr. Pritchett has been qualified before the court as a psychologist, not a crime scene expert or in the nature of homicides. So to this question and this line of questions, defense counsel is objecting.
Your Honor, the issue of impetuosity is one of the most important factors within the factors. It's one that Dr. Bloomfield is going to testify about as well. And the doctor is clearly qualified and has a lot of experience in seeing juvenile crimes and the varying types of those crimes. So he's simply trying to describe why he believes this one is not an impetuous act. And an example of what an impetuous act would be is describing impetuousness within juveniles or within criminals and the differences between categorizing something as non-impetuous and impetuous.
All right, the objection is overruled. Doctor, you remember the question?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may answer it.
Thank you. So the example of to illustrate of what I would consider impetuous crime, for example, a youth goes into a convenience store with a gun with an intent to rob the clerk. The clerk reaches under the counter and the youth fires the gun and hits the clerk and runs out of the store. Okay, so impetuous meaning there's no indication that youth had plans to shoot the clerk. Okay, there's indication that it was kind of an immediate reaction, maybe believed he might be shot, so he pulled the gun. So I would say that would be a good example of likely impetuosity or impulsivity. Now, to change a few of the dynamics in that hypothetical, okay, that same youth goes into the convenience store with a gun to rob the clerk. The clerk gives money to the youth with the gun and is not armed. There's no firearm under the thing. So he gets the money, and the youth takes the money and then shoots the clerk. And then he walks over to the counter and shoots the clerk 20 more times while the clerk is lying on the ground. So you see, in those two different examples, impetuosity in the first one, impulsive, we don't know intent to really do anything when he entered the store, versus the second example where there seems to be clear intent. So clear thought and plan to shoot the clerk, whether he got the money or not, to kill the clerk. Don't shoot him once, you go over and you shoot him 20 times. So it seems far less impetuous and impulsive than the first example, and I would say that's a good direct comparison to the Aiden Fucci case. Okay. So,
and why in this overall realm of Miller-Graham considerations, opinions, psychology, everything that came out of those cases, why is that factor so important?
It's so important because that's why these juvenile sentencing laws came into effect, because youth are typically impetuous or can be impetuous relative to adults. There's no question juveniles are different than adults, and we have to consider that. So they can be impetuous. They can do something without giving it much thought that can affect their life forever and the lives of others forever. And we have to consider. So that's why we have to kind of analyze it to see, does it look impetuous in this case or does it not look impetuous? Okay, so that's why it's relevant.
And that's why it's important to look at the individual. All these factors we've gone through and the act itself, right?
Yes, you always have to look at the individual. Every forensic case, you're looking at an individual. You're not evaluating a group. I was asked to evaluate Aiden Fucci, not a group. But that being said, when you evaluate an individual in a forensic context, you're making comparisons to the group that he comes from. That's the comparison sample. So as I said, these things aren't in a vacuum. How do I know that suspensions matter? Okay, I know they matter because it's unusual for his peer group. So I can say Mr. Fucci as an individual is unusual in the sense that he gets suspended, whereas 95% of his peers do not. And that's kind of how we go about it. So I want to compare him in all the things I'm talking about. The context and the comparative sample is his peer group, juveniles.
And under that same factor, again, I believe there was one other consideration we've talked about into this impetuous analyzation, fantasies, the nature of the crime. You also mentioned your report cover-up. How does that play a part?
Yeah, so cover-up, I didn't really talk about how it was a protracted crime. It was a long crime,
right?
Relatively speaking. So in the example I gave, go in, shoot, leave, takes a second or two maybe, versus go in, rob, shoot once, shoot 20 more times. It takes a lot longer relative to the first example. So in this crime with Mr. Fucci, his inflicting 114 wounds, it takes a long time. It doesn't speak to impetuosity to take that long. There's thought going on in his head as this is playing out. How long exactly did it play out for? We don't know. Let's say a couple minutes.
Objection, Your Honor, speculation.
For 114 stab wounds versus 1 or 2 seconds in the impetuous example I gave. Had Mr. Fucci stabbed Tristan Bailey once or twice? Impetuous, impulsive, probably. 114, I think you really would have a problem making that argument legitimately.
Even if you didn't have that premeditated fantasy information, the crime itself speaks to that, right?
Exactly. Even if you didn't have that premeditation, although I would say clearly he did. Clearly it's there. It's in his head beforehand. So then the final thing would be the cover-up. Okay, so that this really plays to appreciation of risks and consequences. All right. Mm-hmm. So cover up. When somebody tries to cover up a crime, the implication is they understand the risks and potential consequences of that crime, and their effort is to not get caught because they recognize it's wrong. Okay, it all plays into that. So in Mr. Fucci's case, the cover up would be getting rid of the murder weapon probably not too long after the crime occurred. We don't know how long, but it was in the retention pond right near her body. So he got rid of the murder weapon. Okay, so murder weapon, immediately get rid of it, because he recognizes that he doesn't want to have that, or else he'd be caught and implicated, and he doesn't want to be implicated. Same for all other aspects of cover-up, hiding the shoes behind the bureau, hiding the T-shirt under the bureau, lying to people, so lying to Zoffy Bowman and Trey about what happened to Tristan before the body was discovered, lying to his parents when they were talking to him in the interview room, lying to authorities about what occurred. So why do we lie? We lie because we don't want to get caught, because we know we've done something wrong. So it's appreciation of potential consequences that you don't want for yourself. And that's what generates the behavior. So it seems to be clear indication that he's appreciating that related to his case with that cover-up behavior.
Okay. And that blended into factor I, which was the any effect of his characteristics of youth on his judgment. So you sort of outlined that he was able to think through and cover up evidence, at least in his manner. Is that right?
Yeah, the effect of his youth on his judgment. So the judgment to kill Tristan Bailey, is that related to his youth? I don't know how anybody could say it is or it isn't. I don't know. That's hard to identify. But he was obviously demonstrating judgment throughout that. Judgment in terms of, the stab wounds, a number of stab wounds.
Right.
The cover-up, that's judgment. Excuse me. So clearly demonstrating judgment, but how much that judgment related to the decision to kill Tristan Bailey is related to his youth. Again, it's a really unusual act. This murder is really unusual. I don't know how you could say it's related to his youth or not.
And when you give that opinion, do you have some, again, statistics of the group the juvenile group to sort of compare him to on violent acts?
On violent acts, yes. So just generally violent acts committed by juveniles. So the entire group of juveniles who commit criminal acts, violent acts are about 7% of those criminal acts. So it's a small... That's incorrect. Okay. So of all the violent acts, 7% are murders. Okay, so it's unusual. So murder by juveniles, all the violent acts, only 7% are murders. So it's unusual.
Now when he's talking statistics and he's being called as a psychologist.
I'll sustain the objection unless you have something to cite.
I provided it to, I think, both councils.
Dr. Pritchard, you did. You provided
We do have a copy, Your Honor, but it's from the criminal...
From the U.S.
federal organization, and it's not APA or the Association of Psychiatrists and Psychologists.
Let me make the link.
The objection's overruled.
So, yes, it's unusual.
Okay. And again, why it's relevant to your work in this case is what? What are you looking at in making recommendations and opinions to this court about this defendant? Are you looking at all juveniles? Or are you looking at Aiden Fucci?
I'm looking at Aiden Fucci, but I'm comparing him again to all juveniles. That's the reference sample. And we have to see, is Aiden Fucci, is there anything about him that's different as an individual based on what we know about other juveniles and what's normative or normal behavior with those juveniles.
Okay. And all of that is, again, comes out of, as you're aware, the Miller and Graham decisions and why courts, and especially in Florida, court has discretion here. So the court is to look at the individual, and you're here to provide insight and compare him to other similarly situated juveniles. Is that fair?
That's correct. That's fair.
There's two very brief factors, brief comment you probably have on those that the court's to consider. The extent, it's F and G, the extent of his participation in the offense and any pressure on him by outside peers in this case. So did you see any evidence of anyone else's involvement or influence on Aiden Fucci in this case?
Nobody else's involvement. It appears that he acted alone, and it did not appear that anybody influenced him, either peers or family.
One of the last sections you discuss in your report is the possibility of rehabilitating the defendant. And there's some different information in addition to the rest that you talk about in that section. So if you would kind of talk about your opinion on that and then what that opinion is based on.
All right, so the possibility of rehabilitating the defendant, a lot of times the best information to get on this variable comes from after the crime occurred, when they're incarcerated, how are they doing? How are they adjusting? Are they demonstrating things clinically that we would like to see, like some compassion and some sorrow and what went wrong and how can I, you know, do things better and I feel so bad for the family, anything like that? Or do we see things that are more negative that doesn't really speak to the person trying to get better or maybe even recognizing or acknowledging or taking responsibility for what they've done? So in Mr. Fucci's case, the information comes from Duval County Jail, where there's commentary, and I got much of this or some of this from the deposition from Sergeant Cox there at the jail. Sergeant Cox's deposition talked about how Mr. Fucci had been functioning in the jail. One of the things that Sergeant Cox indicated that
Your Honor, we would renew the objection regarding the new acts without any conviction that were cleared by the same paperwork.
The objection is overruled.
Can I repeat that for the...
You may.
Defense renews the objection for the post-arrest acts bad acts without a conviction, that he was cleared in the same case that was read, Dr. Pritchard was not relying on, or at least moving forward in the system.
That objection is overruled.
Go ahead, Doctor.
Right. So the general indication from Sergeant Cox was that since Mr. Fucci has been in the jail, he has been given opportunity to be in the general population at the jail. And I guess I should say that at the jail, he's housed with other juveniles who are direct filed. So these are other juveniles who have serious charges. They're not with adults. So it's another juvenile population, but is in the adult jail. Had opportunity in the general population, but according to Sergeant Cox, it's never worked out for Mr. Fucci because of his own behavior. See, the benefit of being in general population is you get to come out of your cell 8 hours per day and socialize and, you know, play games and watch TV, whereas other places that they are housed, if their behavior is not good, they don't get those level of privileges. So Sergeant Cox described that Mr. Fucci has not been able to make it in the general population very well because he always gets sent back to administrative confinement or disciplinary confinement or seclusion because of something he has done. He mentioned some of the things that Mr. Fucci had been doing in the Duval County Jail that resulted in him not being able to stay in the general population. And essentially, one of the main things was he was extorting commissary. So commissary that he gets, all the inmates get, you know, snacks and things. He was extorting the commissary from smaller juveniles at the jail. When asked about how this extortion was taking place, essentially Sergeant Cox was characterizing that Mr. Fucci would make threats, threats like, if you don't give me your commissary, I'm going to ask them to put you in my cell. So it was kind of an implied threat there. Sometimes was explicit it as threatening to harm or kill the other inmate if he did not give the commissary to Mr. Fucci. It happened to at least two additional inmates there early on, and then it sounded like it happened to two additional ones with different initials later on where he was extorting the commissary. There were a couple of complaints by other inmates that Mr. Fucci was threatening them. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill your people. Was threatening to stab them. There was one indication by Sergeant Cox. He provided a, if I may refer to my report real quick and find the actual quote.
Paragraph 2, maybe. One,
yes.
Or two.
So one of the specific quotes was attributed to Mr. Fucci toward another juvenile. When I go to general population or when I get a chance, I'm going to stab you and I can't wait. I'm going to look you straight in the eye. Right, and so these really explicit, again, unusual comments. So doing this extortion, doing these threats, manipulating, kind of bullying to get things he wanted, and even referencing his case in the process of threatening or trying to extort. So the idea being that Mr. Fucci seemed to be using the incident, and that is the murder and the characteristics of that murder, to exploit and to get what he wants in the jail environment. Okay, and in the absence of, there's it's really callous to make those statements. Most of us see that. It's callous to make those statements that, you know, I'm going to stab you like he did to Tristan Bailey. There's concern for me clinically that he is not demonstrating any kind of compassion, any kind of understanding, and maybe he can't understand what he's caused, the terrible, terrible situation he has caused for so many people, Tristan Bailey's family, the community, his own family. So really a real void in terms of demonstrating some conscience, some understanding that this was terrible and expressing any kind of sorrow for it.
And closer in time to the actual murder, you had a few more pieces of evidence of insight to him. You had the Snapchat videos and then the interaction with his parents. Did you see anything in that evidence that would relate to his ability to be rehabilitated and just his general reaction to the crime and how that applies?
It's just the unusual, incredible callousness about his behavior in the back of the police car. Okay, that's really, really unusual. And you know, it does not suggest clinically that this child, Mr. Fucci, has the same kind of makeup that most of us do and moral compass that most of us do. Okay, so it's exceptionally callous. At that point, he was the only person on the planet that knew where Tristan Bailey was and her status as deceased. And he's laughing and joking and peace signing. Has anybody seen Tristan lately? So really, really callous and concerning. He actually seemed to be having a good time with Trey in the back of the police car. Didn't seem to be that nervous with his parents either when he was speaking to them. So he's got this emotional makeup that for me would be clinically very concerning and for me would suggest that he doesn't have, I would say at this point, I don't see him as a good candidate for prognosis. He's not demonstrating what I would like to see clinically to say, yeah, we have some hope for this guy getting better. He's not demonstrating that. So I would say that at this point, his prognosis is poor for rehabilitation.
And doctor, overall, these post-Graham Miller factors, the 10 that we have sort of covered today, or primarily the 9 that I've gone over with you, the goal of those is to sort of analyze the individual, the crime, give the court some guidance as to how to sentence this particular juvenile. Are they unique in stature, or are we just talking about a general impetuous juvenile? Any final thoughts, additional thoughts, and ultimately your opinion on that in this case?
I would just say that the overall thought for me is that he's a really unique person, I would say, in a bad way. He's demonstrating some things that I think are extremely clinically concerning that we usually do not see in youth, that often we don't see in youth murders. So I would say that, you know, again, his ability to kind of grow out of this, maybe, but he's also got some personality things that are really concerning.
Thank you, Your Honor. No more questions.
Ross,
Your Honor, could we just have a 5-minute break?
Sure. Take a 5-minute
break. I get 10 minutes till 4.
That wraps up the fourth segment of raw courtroom audio in the sentencing of Aiden Fucci. We have 11 segments in total to bring to you, so there is much more to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.